Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Coast to Coast Combat Hour. I'm your host, Matthew Hawkins, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Ed Carbajal. Weekly, we are brought to you by AllAccessMMA.com. Check out AllAccessMMA.com for our video podcast, MMA news, and MMA stories. What's up, brother?
Nothing much, man. Before we get going on this week's podcast, really quick, I wanted to plug the interview I did with Spectation Sports. I spoke with Torres Finney, who's an undefeated middleweight. He'll be fighting on Dana White's Contender Series on October 10th. Normally, my interviews are about 10 minutes long when I do stuff for them. This wound up being going over a little over 20 minutes, and the conversation was so good. It will be the second half of this podcast. So for folks watching, if you're watching the stream and you want to jump to that, it's already up on Spectation Sports YouTube channel. I put the link below if you want to click that and check it out and come back to us later. But if you're listening on Spotify, it'll be an audio-only version this week on Spotify for that reason, because I'm going to plug in the audio of after this audio for this week's podcast. So I wanted to plug that really quick before we move on. And then one more thing before we start talking about Korean Zombie. You saw me hold up this wasn't a big piece of cheese. I got sent a gi to do my very first gi review. It'll be on this YouTube channel, the Blogboard Jungle YouTube channel, when it's done. Some couple of quick plugs, but yeah.
Well, no one will have a problem seeing you when you approach the gym with that thing on. But so like as you said, we're gonna have we're gonna get into the Korean Zombie here. I don't know where if you want to start. I don't know, you know. I feel like I'm going to get some hate if I really like kind of spew everything I think about the career, I would say, I guess, of the Korean Zombie. So I want to avoid getting death threats. So I guess I'll just jump into it. So I obviously super entertaining fighter. Went out on his shield. You know, we always want to see that happen. You know, when our fighting heroes and guys we really enjoyed watching go out. I never saw him fight live, which is one of the, you know, so he's one of the kind of the bigger name guys that I never got to catch. So I don't have a personal, you know, which I have a lot of going to fights. He also never fought on any of the real big cards. If you think back, like there was no Madison Square Gardens. I don't think he was ever on any of the fight weeks.
Yeah. So it was always like a UFC on Fox or a fight night type of situation. You're right about that, but I'll give my two cents on that.
Basically, all I'm getting is a super entertaining guy. I in my world, he's not a Hall of Famer, and maybe that'll like get people to like hate me. But his record was 7-5 in the UFC. You know, he was 0-2 in WEC. I go back to watching him World Victory Road Sengoku when he was 2-1. Obviously, a super exciting fighter. Fireworks. He'll make the UFC Hall of Fame because of who they put in it. It's just in my world, like he's just like a click below like the elite. He was always super fun to watch. Now, obviously, he had terrible injury bug and he had to do his years in military.
Yeah.
So he lost a huge chunk of his prime.
Yeah.
So there is that to be included. But if we're just looking at his resume as a fighter, I mean, I love the guy. I watched it. I never missed any of his fights. But at the same time, like, he's basically a 500 fighter who put on fun shows.
Well,
go ahead.
Just to piggyback off of, because you just mentioned his military service and the injury, and shout out to the guys I train with at Advanced Martial Arts. We were just talking about this last night after class. You know, one of the things about this sport, and we've seen it not just with him, we see if they have to step away from the sport, especially now at the level these guys train at now, if for any reason they have to step away, they get left behind, and then they come back and then they have to play catch up. You know, like Connor hasn't been the same since he fought Mayweather. He came back and, you know, that's when he started picking up his L's. And the same thing with Zombie. He had to do his military service, and then he got an injury. So that was a lot of time away. So because of that is why it's hard to disagree with what you just said, because he lost all that time, so he never got to be, like you said, the main eventer, the pay-per-view guy, you know what I mean, and all that stuff. So I feel like somebody put something on Twitter the other day that they were just like, he just had bad luck outside of fighting with the military and all the injuries and stuff like that. And I think that's kind of like why so many people you know, were into the whole retirement thing and the way he went out and stuff like that. And like, and for me personally, the fact that, I mean, it's, I never, as far as the way he fought, he just kept charging at people. And, you know, he did that from beginning to end. And I think that's one of the things folks really liked about him, are going to miss about him. So, you know, martial artists that compete at that level, I think only they know when their time is done. And I'll have more to say on that later when we close out. But yeah, it's just something that's, I think it's part of just the martial arts way. And you know, I think he did enough. I think he did enough. But
I don't necessarily think he's done either. He is only 36, 37 years old. I would not be surprised. And it might not be in the UFC. Maybe it's in a Korean event. Maybe it's something in Asia. But it wouldn't surprise me. One
championship, which I would really like.
Maybe I don't. I imagine he's probably still got a contract with the UFC. And
yeah,
you know, I mean, he's a big enough name and like enough people. Obviously, the world loves the guy. So I don't know if he'd be the one that they'd let go. You know, like
yeah,
they would probably try to string him along and you know.
Well, if you're following that antitrust lawsuit and all the contract stuff that's out. Apparently they lock in their likeness and their any catchphrases and anything else they do. If you haven't followed, if you want the ins and outs of that, no. Eric McGracken is literally highlighting every piece of that antitrust lawsuit for you on his TikTok or wherever he's putting it. He puts it on X too, or Twitter. So, but yeah, I feel like because of that though, because of that heat, I think it might be a little easier to get out of the UFC than it used to be from. Way back
probably then. And maybe they would grant it if you decided to not mm-hmm. you know compete like in the United States necessarily mm-hmm. like if you stayed away from, you know, okay, you can go fight in one but you can't fight in their US card, you mm-hmm. know what I mean, that kind of thing. That wouldn't surprise me if you kind of work something like that out down the line. I, you know, that antitrust thing is interesting. I mean, I did hear John Fitch mention something about like the idea of maxing it out at like 1 year contracts for fighters mm-hmm. and it sounds like the Wild West, but I got to be honest, the Wild West sounds kind of good to me right now. Like, you know what I mean? Like with the idea of guys knowing that, like,
yeah,
one, you know, like you're a fight away from fighting Francis Ngannou, no matter what organization he's in, you know, that kind of thing. Just, you know, I find maybe fun, you know, it might turn us into boxing, but
yeah, I
feel like we're kind of already there. And yeah, I know there's a lot of loyal, you know, UFC fans and, you know, I mean, you know, Bellator does it too. It's not like it's just UFCs. We tend to occasionally you get that just top filled card and, you know, and a lot of filler and it's all MMA organizations. Some of them don't have as many events as the UFC. So they're not as, they don't have to water it down, you know, as much. They don't have a 500 man roster, but I do like the idea of it being competitive and guys being able to negotiate more often. I mean, we see these guys become free agents and it's like, you know, it's news. It really shouldn't be news that guys are able to negotiate some money for them. Like our minds blown when the best heavyweight in the world gets a big contract. And it's just like, that shouldn't be that way. It should be like, okay, well, so Ngannou's signing for a year with one, he's going to go fight Tyson Fury. He's going to go do something else. And then if he beats Tyson Fury, the UFC can offer him next year $100 million and he can go back to the UFC. You know what I mean? Like that should be how it is. Bellator, you know, in theory, you know, Fedor 10 years ago could have won his fight in M1 and fought in UFC and gone, okay, I'm going to fight in UFC. I'm not going to give you my likeness and everything, but I'm going to fight for a 2-fight contract over a year. If it works, it works. If not, I'll come back to Russia. I'll go back to Japan. I mean, all that stuff would have just made, you know, Randy Couture would have fought Fedor, you know, those things would have happened because you wouldn't have been able to stop him. The, you know, BJ Penn and him trying to fight, you know, everybody in the world and stuff going on when he was in going, you know, toe-to-toe with the UFC on stuff. So, you know, I think it's Wild West, but I think that maybe we need that kind of shakeup to kind of regroup everything and figure out like what this sport actually is. Cause I feel like we're kind of in a weird place right now where we know what we have, but is this what we want the sport to be? Do we want guys making 10 and 10? The payouts for this past pay-per-view came out and like O'Malley and Sterling only made 500k. I mean, they're promoting him as the greatest, you know, bantamweight of all time going into the show and he's making $500,000.
Yeah,
I mean, I don't To me, like, he should be making $5 million, you know, like that. The number just seems really weird to me that, you know, and then they'll go, oh yeah, we sold fucking 600,000 pay-per-views.
Yeah.
$100 a pop, you know? So that's another rant for another day. I feel like we want to jump back to Korean Zombie a little bit. I mean, again,
yeah. The other thing about Korean Zombie retiring, I mean, that's bothering me, and it prompted me to write something in my newsletter that I do, you know, because we're seeing, and we said it before in another podcast, we're seeing a lot of retirements in MMA. It seems like there's more now, more than ever since we've been watching the sport. But the thing about it is, like, that bothers me about this one. I don't know if you felt like this when he retired, but I remember when Korean Zombie was like the hot new guy. It feels like it was like yesterday. So the fact that it feels like it's making me feel old that he's like retiring from fighting. But like you said too, man, it's professional sports. You know, Henry Cejudo retired, came back. Like, so that I feel like that itch is going to need to scratch again once he sits home and he gets bored and he feels like maybe I don't like this normal life stuff. Man, I got a couple more fights in me. I think every athlete goes through that in some shape or form. So that kind of makes me not feel as old, but I don't know if that's how you felt.
Oh, it don't make me feel any younger. That's for sure. But, yeah. but I mean, we're coming to the end of the like second generation now of MMA stars, you know, and that definitely is, you know, we had them all go from, you know, Henderson to Liddell to, you know, Tito hung on for a little longer, but still is essentially out of the game, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We're 10 years ago now, you know, 10, 12 years ago, Rich Franklin's and all the, you know, Matt Hughes, all, you know, the original crop of, you know, badass dudes that carried the UFC and made them what they are today. And now you're seeing, like, you know, now all the Pride guys are gone. And now we're, you know, we're going to get to the point where there's not going to be a lot of WEC guys left. We're going to be going, hey, Cub Swanson is the last WEC guy, you know?
Yeah, I actually thought that last fight, I felt like he was going to retire, but I was kind of glad that he didn't, you know, so.
Yeah, I mean, but, you know, and again, I don't want to come off. I mean, Korean Zombie's great. I wish everybody was Korean Zombie. I wish that's what all the fighters were. But, you know, I have a big, you know, I have a Mount Rushmore. I have a top, you know, group of fighters. And to me, he's just a tick lower than that. And, you know, he'll get into the UFC Hall of Fame if guys like, you know, Cerrone and, you know, but those guys headlined events too. That's where, like you said, it's really weird because he was never on any of the big cards. So he didn't really get that showcase, which actually makes it almost more amazing how famous he is. I mean, he has an awesome nickname. He's got a cool logo and a cool shirt.
Yeah.
You know, that's like the one thing I remember is going to an early expo and there being a bunch of the Korean Zombie shirts out, you know, before every sponsor was taken away from all these guys. But, you know, I guess we maybe should jump into, I guess, the Mirab Dashvili situation for a couple.
Yeah, that definitely deserves some talking about. I know Dana White only made the comment or said the comment again last night, how he's just hating on the fact that two teammates actually don't want to fight each other. My response to that when I saw it was, and somebody put it on Twitter and I wrote it on the bottom. I wish I'd have to look and find it, but that's coming from a guy that hasn't like been through anything with, you know, you build relationships when you share mats with somebody in martial arts or a training room or dojo, you know, the gym, the culture, it's very familial. And if you happen to be in the same, like, you know, competition or whatever, there's always that, it just feels taboo to cross hands with, even though you do it in practice all the time. To do it to the point where someone can get seriously injured and XYZ, you know, for a title, I understand where Sterling and Dvashvili are coming from, and I think you have to be in that culture to understand that. Dana White obviously is not. I know he's done Golden Gloves boxing or whatever the fuck he did before he got rich and famous, and some white belt jiu-jitsu stuff because he said he tried it with the Fertittas back in the day, but. I just feel like, you know, sometimes when you get, you know, all the billions of dollars put him so far away from that, I think he forgot that. And I know he's a promoter. His job is to say shit like that. But it is kind of dickish. And, you know, the fact that you were talking about how he's talking about the fact that he's bringing that up versus Mirab against O'Malley, who the rankings says that should be what happened next. I think he said all that shit to avoid that fight because, you know, he said it again last night too. You know, O'Malley's going to make a lot of money. When they say that, when he says stuff like that, he means we're going to make a lot of money off of you. Mm-hmm. And they want to, O'Malley's a young man, healthy, you know, they probably want to keep that cash cow flowing as long as they can.
Yeah. I mean, you said it perfectly right there. I'll just add that, like, money to Dana White, money's the most important thing, you know, and money's what makes everything go. And money's his best friend. When you got guys that are in the trenches together and have, you know, spill blood on mats together and stuff, like, this is not, if they fought each other and somebody paralyzed the other one, if somebody permanently disfigured, I mean, I just don't, it's all of a sudden that money, and they're not making enough money. They're not making, I'm sorry. If you're going to fight each other and you're best friends or you're that close, you got to change my life. You got to make this where my grandkids don't have to work. You know, like that's how this has to be. Like, what do you, I mean, I just don't get it. And, you know, this is going to be maybe a stupid joke, but like anybody that hit their wives doesn't surprise me that he would want two friends to fight each other. You know, like there's obviously not, he doesn't have that thing. Everything's about money. It's all about making money. Mm-hmm. And on top of it, they're not even saying they won't fight each other. And that's where the MMA media jumps in. Correct the dude at the press conference. Well, let him know that Mirab, nobody's turning down any fights. Yeah.
They don't want to lose that little credential, though.
They both want the fight, but they both have no problem if the other one gets the fight. It's all you have to do is see what they're saying, and that's what it is. But instead, he gets asked some baited question, never gets corrected, and he goes off on some rant about how if you're in this sport, you know, it's the equivalent of being a Major League Baseball player and your manager telling you to bean your brother in the face with a pitch. If you're not willing to throw at your brother's head, then you shouldn't be in Major League Baseball. No, that's not how this works. Mm-hmm. That's not how this works. This is violence. This is violence against each other. And this is not a normal sport. This isn't basketball. This isn't a pickup game of basketball. You know, you can physically, people have died in this sport, you know? So, and you get two guys at that level, who knows what can happen. And one day it will happen. And Dana White's going to go, well, look, yeah, he died, but at least his kids made 45,000 plus 45, you know, or I'll give him his win bonus. Sure. He died, but I'll give his kids the extra 40 grand in the win bonus. I mean, it's just old. Yeah. It's just old. He's the worst. He's the best worst promoter in the world. He promotes the brand like crazy, but he bashes his fighters, and it's bizarre as hell. It's just bizarre as hell.
Yeah, it is. Before we only have a few minutes left, so really quick, we should mention that there is as we're talking shit about the UFC. Of course, there's another UFC this weekend. It's on ESPN Plus. Cyril Gane versus Sergey Spivak. You know, the card is actually really good. I hate that it's only on ESPN Plus. I feel like it should be in regular ESPN because you got that fight as a main event, Namajunas versus Manon Fiorot. Volkan Ozdemir is on the card. I mean, he's still ranked number 9. The card's not that bad. So, and it's I guess it's earlier for you than it is for me. It's a 3 p.m. Eastern start time. So, Saturday afternoons, I'm running around. I'll definitely miss it, even if I was dumb enough to pay for ESPN Plus. But
no, it's a good couple fights. I mean, Gane, I think it's a terrible matchup for him after seeing what Jones did it onto the ground. I think Spivak takes him down and bullies him around. Mm-hmm. And I think Gane, in my opinion, I think we end up seeing Gane kind of wash out and be a surprise. Like, I feel like that's going to happen. I don't, maybe they'll say John Jones took his soul, or they'll figure, you know what I mean? And maybe that's what happened. Yeah. But if he loses this fight, I have a feeling like it's going to be a downward slide and we might not be seeing much of him. Mm-hmm. I feel like Rose needs to pick up a win. We know where she's at, usually kind of mentally, kind of all over the place.
Yeah.
If she were to lose this fight, I don't know. You know, I don't know where she would go from there.
Yeah. And it's going to be, you know, that last fight with her and Esparza that left a bad taste in a lot of people's mouths. So I think both of them kind of have that duty to, I mean, well, Esparza already fought and lost, but you know, like, so like now from that fight, Nami Yunus kind of has to remind folks that, you know, she, if she still wants to be there, she's going to have to prove it on Saturday. And if she doesn't, we'll see it, you know, based on the result, we'll definitely see it. We're going to wrap up now just because, the time, again, the Torres Finney interview is 22 minutes. It'll be following right after we close out here when Matt does the closeout. But I just wanted to say one last thing, a kind of a dedication for this week's podcast. You know, as we talk about it, the martial arts culture and MMA retirement and stuff like that, oddly enough for me over the weekend, my original kickboxing instructor, Victor Garcia, I got word on Monday that he passed away. Victor Garcia was, to this day, I use his jab counter. Victor Garcia Canelo is his full name. To this day, I use his jab counter when I start anything striking, when I'm sparring and stuff like that. And it literally, since I was 16 up to now, so it's like 30 years, it works on everybody that I use it on. I'm not, you know, called me off guard. The last time I talked to him was maybe 5-6 years ago. I'm in Jersey. He moved down to Florida, but you know, he visited, we ran into each other and I let him know that, you know, I was training in other arts or whatever, but he was, when I took martial arts seriously, Victor Garcia was the first person that I went with. I didn't make a lot of money. I had a little bit of money and he was the first person that I was like, you know, how much is it? And I walked to his gym every day. Even when he moved, he had a hard time staying open back then because not a lot of people are anxious to fight or practice fighting back then. Combat sports wasn't what it is now. But somebody, I forget the name of the dude that coined, Benny, Nyla knows the guy that coined the term long pants kickboxing. You can see from the photo, Victor Garcia was, that was the type of kickboxing I did when you hear me talk about kickboxing. And he was my first instructor. So I wanted to dedicate this podcast to him. May he rest in peace, Victor Garcia. So I just wanted to close out with that because it fucked with me, obviously, when I got the news. And definitely somebody that had an impact on my life. So rest in peace, sir.
Yeah, definitely rest in peace and best to his family and friends. Fans can check us out at Combat Hour on X, Coast to Coast Combat Hour on Instagram. Follow me, Matthew Hawkins, at X at MMAHawk21. Also on Instagram at MMAHawk21. Check out Ed on X at Carbazol, on Instagram at Carbeerzol, and Old Head Carb on Twitch. And again, you can always check out our video podcast at allaccessmma.com. Check out allaccessmma.com for our MMA news, MMA stories, and our video podcast, as mentioned. Enjoy the weekend, everybody.
And stay tuned for the Torres Finney interview.
Thanks for listening.
All right, this is Edward Carbajal for Spectation Sports. I'm speaking with Torres Finney, who got the call up for our Dana White's Contender Series on October 10th. Torres, thank you for making time to talk on a Sunday.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Ed. Thank you for giving me the opportunity, man. I'm happy to be here. You know, just got done eating after church. So, I'm happy to be here, brother. How you doing?
I'm good, man. I mean, the longer I work with Spectation Sports and I get the opportunity to talk with guys like yourself, it renews my interest in martial arts, especially mixed martial arts competition, just as I'm about to kind of like get tired of the way things are going with, you know, the way things trend on social media and stuff. And then I get to talk to guys like yourself that remind me of how special this sport is and how special it is what you guys do. I mean, it always makes me I teach jiu-jitsu, so it always makes me talk to like the guys that, the young guys that come up and the conversations I have with fighters like yourself, especially with the opportunity you have in front of you, it means a lot to me. So thanks a lot for taking time to talk, especially on a Sunday. I know you said you're just coming out of church, so thank you. So before I get started, because I got a lot of questions for you, especially you know, with your history with Spectation Sports fighting on Aries and stuff like that. I feel like are you in the training room with Trevor Peak at all?
Oh man, am I? that's an everyday thing, man. We're you know, we both live here at the gym and we both train full time. So yeah, man, I see Trevor every day. Yes, sir.
Yeah, Yeah, so he was like, when it comes to where you train at Ogogi Combatives, he was like my first, the first guy that got on my radar when I first got higher expectations for. He's one of the first people I interviewed. And then he fought a few times before he got the call up for Contender Series. So it's like, it seems, in my perspective, the gym has been put on the map since they picked him up. And the fact that now you're about to follow the same path. I mean, is it by coincidence or did you just, when he got there, did the UFC just say, oh my God, there's a bunch of monsters in there?
Yeah, well, man, I'll tell you, you know, we have a plan, you know, along with my team, but along with Ogogi, but also with my management team. We have a plan, and, you know, we just stayed to the course of the plan, you know, and a lot of the times, you know, sometimes you're like, man, you know, you see these other guys that get these opportunities, and you're like, man, I feel like, you know, I'm on that level, or I feel like, you know, that should be me. You know, we always feel like, oh, that should be us right there. But, you know, God has his timing, and I had to get one more fight. I was really expecting after my fight in April against Caleb Croft that would have been maybe the Contender Series or maybe the call in, but that wasn't to be. And, you know, my management team talking with the UFC and, you know, wanted me to get one more in. I got one more in August, and it's very similar. Me and Trevor's path was actually very same. You know, Trevor fought earlier in the year. Then he fought his big fight against Kama Worthy in August. Mm. He got the call for September. So, and I'm right there. So I fought in August and I get my call, but I'm fighting in October. So the timing is perfect, man. And I'm excited. And plus it gives me the difference between me and Trevor. Trevor only had like 3 to 4 weeks after he just fought Kama Worthy to jump right back in there. Whereas I was able to have a full fight camp for this one. So I'm happy and I'm excited for the opportunity, man. I'm really excited for the opportunity. So I'm ready to show the world who Torres Finney is.
Yeah, man. I mean, and before we even get into like your fighting style and stuff like that, first, because, you know, this is going to be the eyeballs that are going to be on you for this event. You're going to be brand new to a lot of people. So can you just talk about like how'd you find your way into Ogogi Combatives or in mixed martial arts? Like what got you into fighting?
Well, so when I first started, you know, I was playing college football at University of Tennessee at Chattanooga. And, you know, obviously the big thing, the COVID hit. So when COVID hit, you know, a lot of things would change. You know, I had started boxing about January of 2020 because I had an injury in football. I came back from it. Still wasn't allowed to play yet, but the season was getting ready to end for us anyway. And then about January of 2020, I started boxing a little bit. And I was like, and some of the guys at the boxing gym was like, man, we train at this jiu-jitsu gym called Ogogi. So I go try for one time, go with my coach, Matt, and I'm about 250 at about 240, actually. About 240. So I was I'm like a little bowling ball. I'm not the tallest, but I do got some width, and I was able to go with Coach Matt, and he put it on me, you know. But I've wrestled all my life, but I had never been done that way, you know. It's obviously how jiu-jitsu is different, and I was like, man, this is something I want to do because I like challenges. I'm like, okay, this is something I think I want to try out, and you know, COVID hit, and I go back home. But when I go back home, I'm thinking about MMA. I'm like, man, I want to try this out, man, and I'm just watching so much video, so much all of UFC, Bellator, I mean, anything one. I'm watching all types of mixed martial arts, the old school stuff. And this was every day because, you know, nobody's working, nobody's doing anything. So every single day I'm watching, I'm practicing kicks in my room. I'm looking up tutorials how to throw punches and kicks in MMA and jiu-jitsu stuff. And I was just like so invested. And when I came back for football, you know, we had to have a 2-week quarantine period before you're allowed to start practicing. And I know I should have probably been quarantined, but I would sneak out of the dorm and head to Ogogi to train jiu-jitsu, and I would do that every day, and I just fell in love with it. And I started fighting about 4 months later, and the rest is history, which is another thing is October 3rd, 2020 was when I made my amateur debut. And I fight October 10th, so it'll be exactly 1 year, exactly 3 years and 1 week from the day I first started fighting MMA. So, you know, it's been an entire journey, man, 3 years, and to have that opportunity to be to fight on the biggest stage in the world just 3 years, I feel like it's a blessing.
It is, man. I mean, I'm making the note of it now because that's amazing. I mean, you know, it seems like there's the new MMA fighter is waking up like guys to realize like if you see something you want to do, you just got to start doing it instead of, you know, preparation counts, but you can commit to the act of following your dreams, you know, as soon as you know you want to do it. So 3 years is amazing. You mentioned wrestling and football. So, well, I mean, your record says otherwise, but like, so what would you say is your base? Because I mean, there's a history of like explosive power coming from wrestling, translating very well to when wrestlers learn how to strike and producing, you know, a high number of knockouts. Is that what happened with you, or you did mention boxing too? So what would you say is like, what's your base martial art before jiu-jitsu and all of that?
Well, I'll say my base martial art is wrestling, you know, mm-hmm. a mix of wrestling and BJJ. You know, I'm a two-time state champion in wrestling coming out of high school. I went 40-0 my senior year, placed at nationals. I went to nationals. I got ninth in the nation. So, and I had a lot of offers for wrestling coming out of high school and going into college. But my, you know, growing up in the South, you know, from Georgia, it's like that football mindset. And that's what I grew up in. I've been playing football since I was four. And the first thing I'm always thinking of is, man, you know, NFL, you know, D1 football, you know. And every time I would go to a certain college, I would ask them, you know, they'd give me a scholarship for wrestling. I was like, can I walk on or play football as well? And they would be like, no, we want to give you a scholarship for wrestling. So, you know, I would talk to them, you know, listen and everything. But in the back of my head, I'm like, well, they're off the list because they ain't let me play football. So, and I should have thought of it that way, but that's the way I was at the time. And I never thought I'd be able to fight MMA. So that's another thing. I never thought that this would be my journey. This would be my path. And, you know, now it is. Obviously, you're like, man, I probably should have wrestled more in college. But I did have those type of accolades. I mean, I've wrestled with a lot of top-tier college wrestlers. I've wrestled with even some guys that's competed national or in the Olympics. So I've had opportunities to wrestle with those guys and done well. And I knew I could have definitely been on that level, you know, having those accolades of All-American in college or this type of champion in college. I felt like I could have done that. But, you know, that wasn't my path. And, you know, and I was able to become an all-conference football player in the UTC. But I do, man. But my base is wrestling. I've wrestled since seventh grade. So mm-hmm. I've been wrestling ever since I was a young cat, and it stayed with me. I did take a few years off when I was playing college. I did wrestle in college my sophomore year. But after that, I didn't wrestle anymore because I did eventually earn a scholarship when I walked on the football team. So, you know, everything happened for a reason, but I enjoyed it, man. But wrestling is my base and I love it. But a lot of those finishes come from the ground and pound, you know, me on top, taking them down and, you know, beating their head in.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, it's cause like I said, on paper, if someone looked at your record, they would think you're a striker, but I mean, you just gave a really good explanation as to your foundation and your paths to victory. But, what was your reaction when you got called up for, I know you said there was a plan and everything with your management, but like, you know, you never know if when something happens until it actually happens.
That's
so,
right.
So when you found out that you finally did get the call, what was your reaction to it?
Man, you know, I'll never forget this. You know, I was heading back from Nashville the night after the fight, well, the day after the fight. And, I had just won, and this was back in August, like August 5th. And we was riding back, and my agent called me because, you know, he stayed at the house with us. And mm-hmm. I'm thinking he left something at the house, you know, at the Airbnb. And he calls me. He's like, what are you doing on October 10th? And mm-hmm. I instantly knew already once he said October 10th. Because, you know, with me, I was already like, I knew all the dates for the Contender Series. I'm like, man, I hope I was actually hoping I'd fight on October 3rd. It would have been exactly 3 years since my first Emmy fight. I said that just would have been special, but regardless, still October. It's still in my birthday month, so I'm loving it even still. And I'm like, I know what October 10th is. That's a Tuesday. you got the call, and I was like, man. And you know, when it's different when, you know, after each fight, we're expecting, you know, after each fight, you know, after I said I fought in April, I was expecting, didn't get it. After this fight in August, I was expecting, I did get it. Mm-hmm. It was more, once I got the call, I was like, okay, we got it. But it's different when, like you just said, when you actually get it. Mm-hmm. It's different, you know, that's when it sets in a little bit. And I did get a little emotional because, you know, you work so hard for an opportunity and, you know, sometimes you get that no. And then, when it finally comes, you know, you're excited. And the reason why I'm really excited for this opportunity, and I'm so excited to be able to show the world my skill set, is I've been doubted a lot. You know, I've been doubted ever since I was young. I've been doubted since I was in Little League, been doubted since middle school, high school, college, you name it. I'm either too short for this or too small for this or not big enough for this. And, that's just not you, you know. But when I first started MMA, a lot of people didn't think that was for me. They said, man, that's not you. You're too nice. That's not the type of sport you should be doing. That's not for you. I had an amateur boxing match when I first started boxing. I had only had 3 months of boxing experience, and I fought against a guy that had 2 years or of it. And I came up short. I lost by decision, but I didn't care. I mean, I'm a guy like trying, you know, I don't care. And you know, you lose an amateur boxing fight and they're like, oh, that's not for you. You should never do that. And I actually did pretty good in it early on. I gassed out. You know, when you're a football player jumping in boxing, you know, you ain't got the cardio for it correctly yet. But I was just so anxious to compete. You know, that's the wrestler in me. And, you know, it is what it is. But, you know, oh, that's not for you. You shouldn't do that. That's not good. And I'm like, man, that only excited me even more. I was like, man, if I'm able to do this against a guy that got 2 years of experience, you give me 2 years and let me see where I'm at. If I still look the same way I look, then you're right. I shouldn't be there. But I knew in my mind, in my heart, that I'm going to continue to get better because I'm going to focus on it. And that's what I did. That's why, you know, you doubt me. You know, I'm a little hard-headed for success, man. I want to do it even more. So I'm just really blessed and excited, man.
Yeah, that seems to be the right way to handle. Like if you want to be successful and people doubt you, you definitely, it should light the fire to prove them wrong. So that's a really good way to look at it. Before I ask you my last question, just because of something you said with the timing and everything, I mean, what are you somebody that like did you, because it seems like you visualized it, you know, people talk about visualizing goals in their life and then having them, you know, come to fruition. Do you credit to what's happening right now to that? Or, I mean, it's obviously hard work too, because you're putting in the work. Like, what do you credit it to?
Well, I credit to my Lord and Savior Jesus Christ for allowing me to be able to do this. My faith, not only in him, you know, one of my quotes I have on my Instagram bio, I learned it from my college wrestling coach. But he said, you show me the odds, I show you my trust in God. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I love when people say the odds. I feel like I'm probably going to be the underdog going into this fight, you know, so be it. You know, I've always, my junior year, I wrestled against a guy that was a 2-time state champ. He had actually just beat me the week before the state tournament week at sectionals. He only beat me 11-9. And I walked off that mat. I said, coach, I'm going to see him in the state championship next week. I'm going to beat him. Now, granted, you got to go through a whole tournament of guys, other tough cats as well. And, you know, making it to the state championship is not easy. Mm-hmm. And I was able to do that, and I had some tough matches along the way, but I was able to do that. And I saw the guy I was wrestling, he beat me, and I met him in the state championship, and I beat him in overtime in the state title. And it was just having that type of, you know, mindset of, you know, visualizing how the match goes. Now, obviously, things go differently than what you sometimes think, but me visualizing what's going to be the end result. Same thing for this year. Going into this year, my goal was to get 3 fights in on the year. And by the end of the year, I said, my goal is wanted to be into a big promotion by the end of this year. And obviously my top goal was the UFC. And this is my 3rd fight on the year. And my 3rd fight is an opportunity to make that dream come true. You know, most of the times I have to wait on somebody to, in a way I still do this, right? You know, I still have to get the answer from Dana. It's not just win and you get it. You know, you got to win. I don't feel impressed, but most of the time I have to wait on a recruiter or wait on a coach to see whether or not, rather than my skills speak for itself. But now I get to actually have, to be the one to have the hand in my own say so. And that's why I'm so happy. That's why I'm so happy and excited, because, you know, I love the matchup. I love the fight that I got bestowed upon me, and I'm ready. I've been training so hard for this, and this is just going to be this is just the beginning. That's what people don't understand. This is just the beginning.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely something to hear, just to hear you guys talk about your the focus you have and what you've been through and what you got in front of you and the hard work, and not for nothing, the humbleness too, especially you. And I just like the same vibe I got when I spoke with Trevor. The you guys are just like super humble and grateful for to be able to do what you do. And but for fans that don't know you, when October 10th comes, like what can they expect to see from Torres Finney come your ultimate job interview?
A man that's going in there on a mission. I'm going in there on a mission, man. I'm going in there to smash the opponent I have in there in front of me. And I'm going to, you know, it doesn't matter who it is. I'll go in there to dominate every round if it makes it all the rounds, and then go in there and get the win, man. That's the main thing. I'm going in there just to get the win. If I go in there and get the win, I always say my performance will speak for itself. So I'm going in there to get that win, man, and I'm going there to get that UFC contract. It's mine to lose, and I'm not going to let that happen. You know, this is my opportunity. You know, my opponent, he had an opportunity on the Dana White Looking for a Fight on YouTube, and he had his opportunity, and you know, he didn't impress Dana enough. He impressed Dana to get him a contender series, but Dana literally said on there, you know, the only one that impressed him was the guy that was in the main event, which he wasn't, but there was another guy that was also looking at as well. So he had his opportunity. You know, now is my opportunity. Your chance was then. You didn't make the best of it. Now it's my turn. And I feel like I will definitely make the best of it. You know, I'm excited for the opportunity. I'm excited. You know, people ask me about, you know, do you feel pressure? Obviously, any fighter feels pressure walking in a cage, but it's just going to be another day for me. It's going to be no different than when I fought in August and no different than when I fought my amateur debut. Obviously, the nerves are going to always set in, but I'm going in there still thinking about the plan ahead, going in there to smash my opponent and get him out of there.
And your opponent's a Puri Farov. I hope I'm not messing up his name. You and him have a similar record, 6-0.
Yes, sir.
I mean, it looks like you've researched him already pretty well. I mean, what do you, as far like how do you, I don't even know what your fight preparation is. Like, do you do a lot of tape study? How do you get ready for a guy like that?
Yes, sir. I do watch a lot of tape. I watch. So look, like I said, I come from a football background. So football background. We study, man. I was a big film watcher when I played football, and I was a big film watcher even when I wrestled. Me getting it from football allowed me to put it in wrestling. So I'm going to know everything. You know, I watch everything on him. I watch all of, like, his, you know, practice, or, you know, all of his fights, even his amateur fights, the tendencies, you know. And I do that with all my opponents. You know, some of my opponents have tendencies from the time that they start as an amateur still up to a pro. You know, there's certain things that they change, but it's some of the stuff still stays the same. Obviously, they progress the skill set, but you look at those tendencies, and then you also look at the way that they handle adversity, man. And sometimes some guys just don't handle adversity the way you would think. And I really do believe this is going to be another chance and opportunity for me to be able to exploit that. And you know, he's a solid opponent. You know, he's definitely a really good opponent. He got 6 wins, all 6 round first round finishes, all of them by submission. So you know, he's a big time jiu-jitsu guy that did a little judo when he was young, and but he never grew up wrestling. You know, so you know, most people see a Russian, they're like, oh man, the wrestler. He actually never grew up wrestling, so that I feel like that's going to be a little bit of the difference maker. But you know, I definitely respect him a lot, and I do think, you know, he's a formidable opponent. But I am going there to get the job done. You know, it's more about me fighting myself than me fighting him. If I go in there and be me, I always say this to anything, anytime anybody asks me, if I go in there and be me, I don't think anybody on the planet can beat me. So he has to deal with my skill set, and I do believe, man, once I get my hands placed on him, he will be in my world.
Yeah, I mean, it's actually a really good matchup, and it should make for a pretty entertaining fight. I'm sure the highlights that'll come out of it are going to be something else. But well, listen, Torres, I mean, this was fun for me. Again, I mean, talking to you guys, it keeps the sport fun for me personally. So I really do appreciate your time. If you I don't know if you have anything you want to plug before I let you go, by all means, go right ahead.
Yes, I want to first, like I said, thank my Lord and Savior Jesus Christ for giving me the opportunity. And thank you for giving me the chance to be able to come in here and speak on this platform. Thank you to Agogi for their training, Peak Kinetic Performance for my strength conditioning. They helped me out a lot with, you know, my cardio and everything in that facet. All my coaches, Matt Harris, Sterling Peace, Larry Scott, and all my training partners, you know, Trevor, Zane, Josh Booker, Logan, Garrett Gross. You name it. I got a lot of training partners, man, and all the people that helped me along the way. Thank you to Aries for the platform as well to fight on, and then obviously another other promotions that I fought on as well. So Man, thank you, man. Thank you to everyone that's given me the opportunity. Thank you to my family for all the support. So,
well, thank you, and good luck to you.
Yes, sir. Thank you.